Fred Film Radio, Festival de Cannes, France.
Angela Cherby, Fred Film Radio from the Cannes Festival for the director's fourth night. I'm here with João Pedro Rodrigues for Will of the Wisp. Good morning.
Hello.
Well, it's really difficult to summarize your movie in a word, in a phrase, because it's, even if it's a short one, is filled with content. And so let's start from the title. Why this title?
Will of the Wisp. Will of the, you know what the Will of the Wisp is?
Yeah.
I like that literality of something. It's, but at the same time, it doesn't really tell the story of the film. Well, it's connected with fire somehow. And Will of the Wisp, some mysterious phenomena that were people were afraid of them before, in the when they didn't understand what they were. And it's something that is, it comes, it's brief, and it disappears. And the film is a little bit like that. I had this impression when the film was screened that people were like somehow, I don't know, joyful, surprised, joy, and they had a joyful experience, it seemed to me. And then it disappeared suddenly. But I think, I hope the film keeps in the audience's minds.
Yeah. Well, the film, let's say, if we may summarize it, it's like a long flashback on the life of a man that he has on his deathbed. The film starts with that. But this is very reductive because the film is much more than that. And this richness of the film is in also the styles and the kind of way you choose to tell it to us. So it's, there is love, there is eroticism, there is music, there are musical numbers. So how did you make up this all coherently?
Where shall I start? I call it a musical fantasy, even in the credits. And this definition, I would say, I discovered it during the editing, because first I was going to call it a comedy and then I thought that because there's also a lot of melancholy and it's even a little bit tragic in points. So I thought fantasy. We lived, when we were shooting, we lived in a world of fantasy. It was so joyful, this shooting, that I really felt that we and the crew and the team and the actors were living a special moment. And I think so this somehow led me to the idea of calling this film a fantasy. And I don't know if you saw another film of mine called, To Die Like a Man. Yeah. There's a character called Maria Bacher, but the actor who plays the Maria Bacher, Gonçalo Ferreira de Almeida, he always said to me, my character is it's a fantasy character. And I love that idea. And so I reminded myself of him and thought this was really appropriate to call the film. And so I wanted to make a comedy, and a musical comedy. And so it came from that, I think, this idea of a film that is told in flashback. And the main character remembers his past because of a song. And so we are already in a musical tone. And that song will prevail throughout the film until even in the final credits. And then in the writing, these songs they are very different songs. There's even classical music. I had never used classical music. But all the songs were on the script except the Mozart, the magic flute. That was while I was editing with my editor. And we thought, because in the painting there's a player, a flute player. And I thought, I'm going to listen to Mozart again, and perhaps this is really, and also because it's a love story, the magic flute, it's a fantasy too.
the film is, luckily for us, a funny, ironical, and unapologetic queer film, and we don't see as many good queer films lately, like queer in terms of your version of queerness, of like free and ironical, somehow very sexy, a little bit too sexy, but always very attractive and enjoyable. Why do you think so? It's so difficult to make good queer films?
I think it's difficult to make good films. Point. So I think there's a lot of crap being done. And so there's a lot, and that includes every sort of, and every genre of film. But when I started making films, I never wanted to make queer films, you know. I just wanted, because I love cinema, and that's why I was studying biology, and I started when I was 15. I wanted to be an ornithologist. And then I studied biology, and when I was 15, I started watching films a lot. Not really watching, because it was not on TV. I went to the cinema. And I was seeing, I don't know, 3 films a day sometimes. My parents were like, crazy, you cannot do this. Sort of. They were worried with me. And sometimes they didn't even let me go to the cinema because I was a minor still. But then, okay, they understood. So I went to biology university faculty. But then I quit and I went to film school. Now I was lost. Where your question was? I'm lost. Sorry.
No, you were saying that it's very difficult to make good films.
Oh, okay.
Point. But that when you start thinking about this.
Where I was getting to. Because I didn't want to make queer films. Oh. Yeah. I never thought about it. It's not that I didn't want to make queer films. It's not, I cannot go against my nature. I really feel it. Someday I'll just make I really don't make a distinction. I don't see my work when I'm doing a film. I don't think I'm doing a queer film or I'm doing a Western or I'm doing, I don't know. I don't think
it's not programmed. It just happens.
It's I cannot go against my nature. It's I'm queer myself. So that's the stories I want to tell.
Actually, this is linked to this other question about the use of male bodies and the way you shoot to male bodies, the way you make us watch at male bodies, which is always, there is some desire in it, but there is some also appreciation. There's never porn, even if there is sex, but the sex is never shot as a porn film. It's just that there is a higher intellectual approach. That
I feel that when I'm every actor, even men, women, whatever, are that I'm filming, I have to desire them somehow, and so I think that shows in the way I film the actors as their bodies, right? And I'm a little bit tired of this some cinema that is. Of miserability, you know, where you just show ugliness and portray ugliness in an ugly way, and I find it very offensive sometimes. Mm-hmm. Why people, and I think that happens a lot in like people that live good lives and they just go and film poor people somewhere, usually in some poor country, and I think that is. Not that everybody does it like that, but it's even offensive. Mm-hmm. And I'm often offended by films that are, I don't know very well the word that I should use, miserabilist. You understand what I mean. And so when I portray my actors, even, for instance, in this film, the dancers, they are very different. They have very different bodies. Like the commander, she's wonderful, and I think she's beautiful. But she has a body that is out of the normal bodies that I really wanted this diversity, and I think that is fundamental. It's diverse. I need every sort of person to build the world. I think it's really an inclusive somehow because we found, but not just because they had different bodies, also because they could dance and they could act the way I wanted them to act. But when I'm filming them, they have to be beautiful. If not, it doesn't make sense.
Well, actually, the dancing scenes are very, very well done in terms of, as you said, they They can dance, but they are not actual professional dancers. So they dance in the wrong way. They use their body in the wrong way.
Yeah, yeah, not all. Not all, because some are professional dancers.
Some are, yeah.
Yeah, but they it's not like all perfect.
Yeah,
but
it's not like a Broadway musical.
Yeah, sure. But that was on purpose also, because they couldn't do it. Some of the dancing is a little bit athletic, mm-hmm. so... it was hard for them, and we rehearsed a lot. So, but I wanted that awkwardness also in the, and I think that is part of the game of making it also moving and emotional when the commander enters and she grabs. It's like a hurricane. She's so beautiful, Claudia. I love her, and so.
I have one last question about the content, the social content, because the main character is a noble and he wants to become a fireman, so he has to mix with like normal people. So there is this continuous fight, which is a nice fight, but there is a fight between like different levels of society, and you're very ironical about that.
Yeah, no, it's all about irony. And I don't think it would be possible to make it seriously. It would be ridiculous. But he comes from a very formal world. He was brought up with a certain education, and where he's somehow restrained, and then he finds a world that is totally the opposite somehow, freedom, in the fireman's, caserne, how do you say that? In the fire,
like warehouse.
At the fireman's, and he finds love also, and love at first sight. So,
and actually, he can admit to himself what he knew he was since the very beginning.
He lives in a world of pretense where people are always acting their own characters. Yeah. That's why there's also this theatrical, it has a theater with doors, with sliding doors that open and close like stage curtains.
Can be shown and what cannot be shown.
Yeah, yeah. And with this idea that they are playing their own characters and they are looking at the camera, and the mother, she's aware, and she corrects the father when he calls the painting by the old name and not the new name. And that is a real, that painting was really first called the Marriage of the Negro Rosa, and now it's called the Nuptial Masquerade, or nuptial?
Yeah, you say.
And it's a painting that is Portuguese, and but was sold to France by some duke. And now it's in La Rochelle in France. And that was the moment when it was renamed, because you could not have any more in the museum saying the Marriage of Negro Rosa, because it's not politically correct nowadays to say that.
Well, João Pedro, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for being with us. Sam, thanks a lot for this funny and wonderful film and short one, which is a good, a nice feature for a film nowadays. Thanks a lot for João Pedro Rodrigues for Will of a Wisp. I'm Angela Cherby for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.